The Tom Woods Show, episode 1946.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year. The 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Dan McCarthy is my guest today. Dan is editor of Modern Age. He's also the author of a regular column for The Spectator, and I always benefit from his columns. They're always interesting, topical, and he's got one on the January 6th matter. And man, are the elites fixated on January 6th. So between that and COVID, there's like nothing else in the headlines. So we got to talk about one of them, and so we're going to talk about that today, and then just see where the conversation takes us. Now, let me just point out one thing. I recorded this conversation with Dan actually last night, and as I was doing it, now maybe it's just that I'm out of practice because I took a few episodes off, but in the middle of recording it, I realized that my side with my voice on it suddenly had stopped recording. So there is a portion of this episode in which I have to rely on the Zoom recording of me, which I use Zoom for the guest, in case you, who cares? I know you don't care about these details, but I use Zoom for the guest's side of the conversation. But in a pinch like this, I can also get my own recording. If something's fluky with my real recording, I can scrape it out of Zoom. So it means that there's going to be a little portion there where I sound not so good, the audio quality is not what it could be. And again, I know some of you are just laughing, thinking nobody cares. Okay, this is the sort of thing only podcasters talking to each other care about. But for the record, it is not my audio guy's fault. It's my stupid fault. Okay, now having said that, Dan, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, me too. You know, to be back in front of the microphone and to be talking to an old stalwart of the show, Dan McCarthy, feels really great. And of course, I'm always grateful to you, Dan, because you have a regular column that comes out. And for a guy who kind of needs five episodes a week, somebody who writes a regular column is a real help. And in particular, on a topic that a lot of people, you know, just can't seem to let go of, but that we've got to get right. And that is this whole January 6th riot. I think you have a rather unique take on it. And I thought your point that if you're going to suggest that everything needs to be pulled down and George Washington is bad and all these other people and institutions are bad, well, what right do you have to be surprised if people think maybe the institutions that they built were bad? I mean, this is not a sustainable way of propagandizing the American public. But first of all, let's talk about what your key points here are, because I understand that you don't want to say, well, look, there were other examples of people engaged in bad behavior and that wasn't punished as much as this or whatever. But that still is a reasonable point. I mean, the BLM rioting was way, way more dangerous to way more people. And it's treated like if you were even concerned about it, there's something wrong with you. I mean, there is definitely some kind of weird disproportion here.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, you think about the crises that the country has been facing over the past year or so. And it seems to me that COVID, obviously, and the reaction to COVID, the lockdowns and everything else, that's very high up there. We've seen, however, that violent crime rates have been spiking to such a degree in places like Washington, D.C., where I live, that the death rate has been, you know, larger in recent weeks than the death rate from COVID. So you would think that if you're taking on the most important matters that are facing the country right now, you'd be putting the priority on freeing the country, putting the priority on healthcare, and putting the priority on fighting the crime in our streets, which is taking the lives of dozens, hundreds of Americans, perhaps, every weekend. And instead, you know, we have the Congress having hearings about and trying to create commissions about, basically constructing political show trials all about the January 6th riot, which led to the death of one person as a result of the riot itself. A few people died because they had, you know, just poor health in general, and they keeled over in the midst of the excitement. But only one person was actually killed as a result of the riot. And that person, of course, was one of the rioters, one of the protesters, Ashley Babbitt. But somehow this incident is the thing that commands the attention of Nancy Pelosi, not only of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in Congress, but of course of the entire you know, propaganda apparatus that supports the Democratic Party and the American left. What explains this misplaced priority? And it seems clear to me that it really is a crisis of legitimacy. It's the fact that Pelosi and the ideological left behind her, they understand that they simply do not have the support of the American people, despite having, you know, squeaked through in the last election and held on to the majority in the House of Representatives. The Democrats and their liberal friends, their, you know, progressive left friends, rather, in the wider world, they are terrified of losing power. They can feel their grip slipping, even at the same time as their own hard left wing is demanding more and more critical race theory and more, you know, transgender radicalism and all kinds of other things. So the Democrats, I think, are in a sort of point where they're facing extinction if they can't, you know, sort of successfully push back against Republicans and against people who are just turned off by their own party. And if the Democrats can't do that by demonizing all Republicans, all Trump voters as being sort of insurrectionist, fascist, you know, whatever you want to call them, if the Democrats can't succeed in demonizing their opponents like that, then their own party is, first of all, going to face a rout in next year's midterm elections. And in the long run, I think it's going to face a tremendous crisis because the Democratic Party puts on a facade of being, you know, the party of an avuncular Joe Biden. But in reality, it's the party of a really radical cultural and economic left.
You know, I'm looking at also Peter Van Buren's recent article on the subject of January 6th. I'll link to both of them at tomliss.com/1946. And see, Dan, I deal with a problem that you happily have just emancipated yourself from by just ignoring it, which is the libertarian movement. I have to deal with those people. I don't have to. I choose to for some reason. Self-hatred. I don't know why. But I see people who are, you know, who fashion themselves as being kind of respectables among libertarians. And even now, what is it, August? I still see them tweeting about the dangers and the terrors of January 6th. So these are people who reliably buy into the regime's narrative every single time they buy into it. Now, sometimes that means they have to apologize later. Oh, maybe Iraq wasn't responsible for, you know, all this stupid nonsense. But man, do they go for it time and again. And now to observe what's happening, whereby the priority now of law enforcement is going to be increasingly domestic terrorism and demonization of people with alternative views, the kinds of things that were done using social media to try to track down who's connected to what right-wing, you know, allegedly right-wing group. I don't see how you could be so blind as to think, yeah, I'm going to push this narrative that January 6th is the big danger, when it's clearly, number one, obviously been exaggerated, but secondly, it's being exploited in the service of something that if you're an actual libertarian, you're not going to like the way it's going to come out.
That's right. Even if you want to make, you know, the narrowest possible sort of rule of law arguments based upon January 6th and the response to it, the things that the government is doing here and the things that the Democrats are doing as a party are an absolute, you know, travesty of the rule of law and of any kind of procedural norms. So, for example, in the second impeachment of Donald Trump, first of all, how can you impeach and remove someone who is going to be out of office before you can get to the vote to remove him? How do you remove someone who isn't in office?
Why would Nixon have resigned if he thought they could still impeach him after he was in private life?
Quite so. And the other thing, of course, is that once he is in private life, there's no longer any question of having any kind of presidential protections against prosecution. So the whole reason we have the impeachment process is because the president is in charge of the executive branch. The executive branch is in charge of prosecuting crimes against the United States. If the president is in charge of the prosecutors, it's clearly a problem to say that the president's going to prosecute himself, basically. But once the president has left office, there's no longer a need for the impeachment process, because at that point, the new administration can launch prosecutorial proceedings against the former president. The fact that the Democrats haven't done that is, of course, because there is no criminal case that could be made against Donald Trump based on what led up to January 6th. Now, beyond that, you saw that in that second impeachment show trial, basically, against Donald Trump, the Democrats, you know, flagrantly edited the video of the remarks that Donald Trump made on January 6th to his supporters. Donald Trump, you know, urged his supporters to peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard to Congress. I mean, that's the most fundamental right guaranteed by the First Amendment, the right to petition Congress, the right to make your voice heard peacefully and patriotically. The Democrats, they edited out the words peacefully and patriotically and made it sound like, you know, Donald Trump was sending people to go and invade the Capitol, which he absolutely was not doing. And you would think that if you had a strong case to make against Donald Trump, you would be willing to, you know, present all the evidence openly and fairly, as you would have to do if this were an actual legal proceeding and not a kangaroo court that is purely political. If this were an actual legal proceeding, you would have to present all the evidence, the exculpatory as well as the apparently damning, and present that and let the jury make their decision. The Democrats, because they didn't even want to pretend to be fair, really have shown just how hollow and vacant their entire case was. And then as regards the actual rioters themselves, right now, the federal courts are having a very hard time figuring out what makes the January 6th rioters different from all of the various left-wing groups, people like Code Pink, for example, who routinely, I shouldn't say routinely, but on a quite frequent basis, will disrupt the proceedings of various committees and pieces of legislation. It's not unusual, of course, for someone to burst into, you know, a congressional hearing or a congressional vote and to, you know, sort of wave a protest sign or otherwise, you know, disrupt proceedings. So where is the line going to be drawn between that kind of protest, which the left has tolerated for many, many years, and something like January 6th, which obviously is on a much larger scale, but in principle involves many of the same things?
Well, here's one of the aspects of this that concerns me. Apparently, there were 539 arrests. Most of these people didn't do anything violent, and basically they're just being accused more or less of various kinds of trespassing charges or violating a curfew. And yet, almost all of them, and this is in Van Buren, almost all of them have been denied bail and are being held in solitary, locked down 23 hours a day. Now, if this were anybody, if this were, and by the way, I'm not saying it would be a bad thing. If this were happening to, let's say, foreign Muslims or something, well, I would be against that too, okay, as virtually everybody would. But it would be much more fashionable to be against it, and so more people would be. Instead, I hear not a word about this from either official libertarianism or the ACLU, even though the ACLU says prolonged solitary confinement is torture and certainly should not be used as a punitive tool to intimidate or extract cooperation. But this is obviously a political prosecution, and Biden's attorney general is the one making the decision about jail conditions. These kinds of things are actually happening. Then we get that story about the Lego set. The guy built a Lego set. Turns out he hadn't even built it. Box is still sitting in his house. You can buy it on Amazon. I cannot come up with, and again, I know this is not your problem to solve, Dan. I cannot come up with a charitable explanation to account for why anybody who is either libertarian or right of center would for a second be buying into this, oh, this was a terrible assault on our sacred whatevers, when we see what's really happening to these people and the demonization and the bias and the political prosecutions and the agenda for the future. I don't get it. I mean, you really crave respectability that much?
Yeah, you would think that if libertarians, you know, even the most beltway-based and, you know, respectability-craving libertarians, you would think that if libertarianism is worth anything at all, it is worth the defense of the little guy against the state. It's worth the defense of the First Amendment, you know, and the rights to petition Congress, the rights to, you know, speak and to protest. These are things that in every other circumstance, Beltway libertarians are not only going to defend them, but they're going to defend them to the absolute maximum. Whereas here, not only are they not taking that kind of radical First Amendment line, no, they're not only totally indifferent to what the procedural violations or the sort of harsh conditions the rioters are being confronted with right now in detention, the Beltway libertarians are hyping the idea that this was an existential threat to the country as a whole, and that basically there is a justification for further restrictions upon the liberties of not just these rioters, but of anyone who has dissenting views about Joe Biden, about the 2020 election, about the way in which the federal government uses its power, and the way in which the cultural left, you know, independently uses its strength. As you've alluded to, there is this push afoot to try to create, first of all, they want to nationalize the U.S. Capitol Police Force, which is already, it doesn't have quite the same degree of accountability that an ordinary civil police force has. They want to increase its scope to give it a certain amount of sort of national reach. And just basic questions of the rule of law and the place of our liberties and the place of our liberties vis-a-vis the federal government, right? The idea that we have the ability to speak out against anything that the government is doing, our libertarian friends in the Beltway are sort of indifferent to or actively hostile to these principles. So it's really just revealed what a sham a lot of sort of respectable libertarianism is.
All right, before we continue, let me take a brief minute to say a word for our sponsor, BitTrust IRA. The cryptocurrency world has gotten a bit more user-friendly, but it can still be intimidating for beginners. And for folks who are thinking it would be wise to diversify their portfolios with an asset like Bitcoin, well, how do you go about doing that? And the answer is with the help of BitTrust IRA, because they will help you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. They store your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. So go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners. That's a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods. bittrustira.com/woods. You know, Dan, this is kind of unrelated to what we're talking about, but I'm just looking at the state of the country right now. It just seems like just over the past 2 weeks, things have gotten so much worse in so many ways with COVID and vaccine passports in New York City. And now they're thinking about San Francisco. You can't go to a restaurant without a vaccine. And the thing is, I think there are a lot of Americans who support that. There actually are a lot of Americans. So when I look now at all these big issues, like not occupational licensing or things nobody cares about, but issues that really will get you hated in the media. You cannot rely on the Republican Party on anything that involves potentially being hated in the media. Thomas Massie doesn't care, apparently. He's actually gotten much, much tougher, clearly, over the past couple of years. But whether it's the January 6th commission, or it's the vaccine passports, or it's all these threatened restrictions and changes and whatever, in perpetuity, I just feel like I'm sitting here helplessly hoping the Republican Party does the right thing. What is your thought about all this?
Well, I agree with you. The Republicans are absolutely the weakest possible reed against any of these kinds of arbitrary abuses of power. And I share your very dim view of the Republican Party. And yet, we've been put in a position where it seems as if, you know, the Republicans, as you know, pathetic as they are almost the only force that could possibly even slow down, let alone really resist the kind of arbitrary strength that's being used against us. So it's terrible, but it does show that there is at least a minimum amount of value in having some degree of political competition in our system. And of course, this too is something that's being attacked. It's one reason why the Democrats are eager to change the rules for voting to make sure that they can limit the possibility of Republicans actually being able to leverage elections to, you know, put up a resistance to this comprehensive power that the progressive left wants to wield, not only in government, but also in private institutions and big tech, and also, you know, by default on the streets, right? So I think one problem that libertarians have to confront right now, and this is not just the sort of beltway and respectability craving libertarians I'm talking about, but all libertarians, they have to think about what happens when the coercive power of the state is used in cooperation with the arbitrary power that free institutions are able to apply. Obviously, you know, an institution like Google is not going to be able to coerce you actively the way that the state can do. But also because Google is not bound by the First Amendment or by any number of other restrictions upon the state, which, you know, in terms of the state's own legitimacy, the state has to at least pretend to abide by those things, or else it's going to face much stronger opposition from the people. Because the private sector is not subject to any of that, the private sector is able to get away with a lot more without generating the same kind of resistance. And it's why you see a lot of respectable libertarians and others who are willing to defend any kind of censorship being practiced by Google or Facebook or Twitter or other social networks. And then the third component here is that you have actual criminal activity, whether it's hackers attacking alternative social media like Gab or like Parler, or whether it's street criminals who are being sort of unleashed upon, you know, ordinary Americans and who are not being, you know, Americans are not being protected by government. Instead, you have this situation where government is being used to prosecute Americans who try to protect themselves with firearms against criminal mobs. All of this is moving in the same direction, and all of it is moving towards, you know, sort of teaching the American people who's really in charge, and who's really in charge is the aggressive progressive left. And Americans, you know, you're not allowed to defend yourself. You're not allowed to use your political rights, either, you know, in terms of organizing to, you know, elect officials who might be less bad, or in terms of going and petitioning Congress, all of these, you know, sort of basic rights and liberties, First Amendment and Second Amendment, are under constant attack and are being eroded. And it just shocks me that people who profess a concern for liberty don't see how these, you know, state and private and criminal elements can be welded together into a single force, which can then become an overwhelming assault upon our liberties.
Right, right. So here's the way I am looking at things right now. Right now, when it comes to opinion molding, we know how the media operates. We know the entertainment world. They're all a bunch of clones of each other. Nobody wonders what they think about anything because they already know. And yet all it would take. Now, by the way, I don't want to disparage somebody like Rand Paul or Thomas Massie. They've been absolutely heroic, and I've written about that multiple times. But neither one of them is really the man of the hour, ultimately, in terms of rallying the American people. They're doing great work. All we need are a handful, even one, cultural figure to stand up and say, there are millions and millions of us who are deeply unhappy about what's going on right now, and particularly with COVID, and they're never going to let it go. There are many millions of us, and there's got to be strength in these numbers, and we're going to start doing something. People are waiting to be told, look, I'm facing these moral dilemmas at work regarding the vaccine and whatever. They don't know what they're supposed to do, and nobody's telling them what to do, and the Republican Party in politics is no help. We just need just that one entertainer who's willing to say, I'm going to take all the slings and arrows because I have $100 million in the bank and it doesn't matter to me. And I am going to lead people here. So I've thought to myself, like somebody like a Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson is exhausted. He's gone through an awful lot. He's not the man of the hour. But even if he were mentally and physically capable, he's not the guy we need. But there's somebody like that. And it astonishes me that whoever that person is has not emerged when the need for that person is so overwhelming right now.
Yeah, although I do think that just as we've seen the political establishment lose all of its legitimacy, really over the past 30 years, you know, step by step, our political establishment has, since the end of the Cold War, engaged in a number of follies, a number of, you know, sort of ideological misadventures in the Middle East, a number of self-dealing, you know, economic shams. And also, you know, you have the sex scandals that they repressed for so long, or suppressed, which are now coming out day by day. So you now have this new one regarding, you know, one of George Soros's chief lieutenants who, you know, not just was, you know, sort of abusing these women that he was having sadomasochistic relations with and was engaged in non-consensual, you know, sort of abuse of them, but, you know, he has alluded to abusing his own daughter, even as he, you know, was in the process of abusing these women that he was with. So you have a political and an economic elite which has lost its legitimacy. I think the cultural elite has also lost all of its legitimacy. And there are very few figures out there now in the entertainment world who, even if they did come out and, you know, were to express opposition to what's going on in the country, first of all, they would be squelched by all of the social media, all of the networks. And there's also just, you know, very few of them who have the kind of fan base or the kind of broad reach in popular culture now that figures would have had a couple generations ago.
Yeah, that's true, Dan. But who would have predicted an obscurity like Jordan Peterson to take over the world? You know, he had no following.
Well, I don't think Jordan Peterson took over the world, though, to be honest. I mean, Jordan Peterson is a very intensely followed guy with among his readership. But I don't know that beyond his, you know, intense following that he has a wider cultural salience.
Yeah, okay, this is one we could argue. But I think he took a lot of people who had no particular commitments and just listened to him and suddenly, you know, he changed their lives. I mean, he's like Ron Paul.
No, that's true. I agree. I agree with that.
I think he's like a Ron Paul. That
right.
There
but
were
even
some
Ron
people
Paul,
who were.
Remember, Ron Paul didn't actually win any, you know, Republican primaries. So,
yes,
I
however.
Think a lot of our friends are too easily impressed by.
No, sorry.
Tens
no.
of millions to change things.
No, that I totally understand. That part I'll accept. But bear in mind, right now, if you think about the people who have been consistently outspoken and sound, and who have really rallied people on the COVID stuff, it's Ron himself, it's his son, and it's Massie who came into Congress because of Ron and Rand. I mean, that is a long-term effect, that right there. We would have far less opposition because we would be relying entirely on the establishment of the Republican Party. You got to admit that.
Yeah, I just don't see that any of that is equivalent to having, you know, the kind of reach beyond the liberty movement and reach beyond the conservative movement, very broadly understood.
That's true, but I think Ron has reached and Rand have reached people way beyond in the vaccine community and alternative health. Those people have been left hanging out to dry, and the only game in town is Ron and Rand, I think.
That's all true, but those are all subcultures. What I'm saying is that, you know, the normies are not going to be reached by any of that. And there was a time, you know, 30 years ago when I think that, you know, an Arnold Schwarzenegger perhaps was someone that, you know, everyone had seen in movies, and therefore a celebrity like that taking a political stand on something would have really broken through to a lot of people who otherwise were completely oblivious, and tens of millions of people like that. Whereas today, I don't think there are, you know, figures of as much celebrity as had existed, you know, in the early 1990s, for example. I think Hollywood has so diluted and destroyed its own sort of cultural preeminence by its leftism that it no longer has, you know, any figure who has that kind of salience. Now, Donald Trump is maybe the best, you know, sort of counterexample, because Donald Trump, of course, in 2016, you know, he went from being a figure that millions and millions and millions of people had seen on television to being someone that they would actually vote for and make president. So it can happen, but I think there are very few figures like that. And, you know, as we discuss this, the one name that comes to mind is having the kind of celebrity that is broad enough to maybe break through is someone like Kanye West. But I think it's immediately obvious what kinds of character assassinations would take place against Kanye West if he were to speak out on something like this. I mean, you already saw it just with his dabbling and being a little bit friendly to Donald Trump. He has been, you know, sort of demonized, and, you know, his personal life has been wrecked and attacked and so forth. And I can't see that anyone out there has greater celebrity and would, you know, not be treated in an even more, to an even more thoroughgoing character assassination. So I think there's no hope in terms of a celebrity, you know, going to ride to the rescue and pull us out of this. I think it really is a matter of people, you know, just in their own lives and within their communities and, you know, sort of organizing person to person, peer to peer. That's one reason why the fact that the social networks have been turned against us is such a powerful obstacle, because, you know, we are in a position where you can't have a charismatic leader of any kind come to the rescue from Hollywood or from politics. It really does have to be peer to peer. But peer-to-peer organizing these days is heavily online and is something that Facebook and Twitter and Google are able to manipulate to a very large degree.
That's not the answer I wanted, Dan.
I'm sorry. It's very pessimistic, I realize. On the other hand, I mean, the decay of legitimacy that you're seeing, you know, in all of these cultural institutions as well as political ones, I think that is slowly moving the American public to a point where they, you know, are just willing to throw the bums out. They just need to have instruments that will allow them to do that, both, you know, in the private sector, to replace Hollywood, replace the social networks with something. And it's very hard to do when you've got a rigged financial system and you've got political power being used to reinforce the cultural power of these institutions. But slowly, I think it's happening. I think that entropy is a force that the progressive controlling left cannot possibly overcome.
Well, I'm hopeful for that too. Can you tell us, what do you have cooking that's interesting for us in Modern Age, the journal that you edit?
Well, we've had a couple of essays recently on the American economy and the extent to which it may be rigged, the extent to which it may or may not be delivering for ordinary Americans and their families. You've got a lot of ferment right now on the American right, you know, both in terms of libertarians who are looking at the system and saying, gee, maybe this is not, you know, a free market system after all. Maybe this is not something we want to defend root and branch. And then you have a number of thinkers on the right, people like Orrin Cass, for example, who, you know, take a more benign view of the state and think the state is able to, you know, come to the rescue of American families. So there's this interesting debate going on as to what kind of economy we actually have. We had several essays on that topic in the current issue of Modern Age. We'll have several more in the next one as well. Beyond that, we'll be looking more and more at this way in which progressivism is able to use a combination of state power and private power, and also a certain amount of influence from Antifa and other, you know, criminal elements out there, to create a complex of power that privately or just using, you know, sort of elections. But you actually need to have a right, a movement for freedom that is able to comprehensively battle this comprehensive alliance on the left.
Well, we're going to leave it there. I'm going to link, of course, to both your column on the January 6th episode and to modernagejournal.com. I'll link to those at tomwoods.com/1946. I appreciate you coming on to, you know, help me get the show back revived and going again after my temporary absence. And I just wish it could be, again, I feel like half the time I talk to people like you, I'm talking to you like it's a funeral, you know, where you have to say, I wish it could be under different circumstances that we meet, you know, but unfortunately, these are the times we're living through, and I appreciate you helping us navigate. Thanks, Dan.
Well, it's great to have you back, Tom. And, you know, I think shows like yours are actually a tremendous source of hope, and that there are, again, you can't look to a single figure like a Jordan Peterson, perhaps, but I think that, you know, podcasts and, you know, sort of larger networks of knowledge that are being created by people who are willing to resist the centralization of all of this overwhelming power. I think these, you know, sort of broad distributed networks of thinking, and your show is, you know, one of the prime nodes here, they really are going to win the battle in the long run. It is going to be a long fight.
Well, I really appreciate that you just said that, because I'm feeling very demoralized lately, and to feel like I'm playing at least a small part in this is encouraging. And same to you, Dan. Thank you for what you continue to do.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody, we are just about at that time again. That is back to school time of year. So if you are thinking about taking the plunge with homeschooling, you should seriously consider the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum, which I helped create. I made hundreds of videos for it, teaching history to your kiddos. So check that out. And of course, if you're thinking of joining it, you have to join through my link in particular, because if you just go to the Ron Paul curriculum website, you're just going to get the curriculum, and that's fine, but you won't get any of my bonuses. So you got to join through me. You get $160 worth of free bonuses. I've got all kinds of great goodies that you cannot get from anybody except from me. So my link that you want to join through is ronpaulhomeschool.com. So always remember that, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Go do that. Spend the weekend checking that out, and I will talk to you soon.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.